Hello, I wanted to take a moment to thank you for listening, and also to explain why you might hear ads like this before, during, or even after an episode. We're a small but mighty team here at Realm, and to help fund our shows, we promote products or services that we think you'd enjoy from a variety of sponsors. If any of our ads interest you, one of the best ways to support us is by visiting the link or using the promo code in the ad. It's pretty much a win-win since you can get some great deals and we can keep making awesome shows like this one. You can also visit realm.fm/partners for more information about our sponsors and how to access the different promotions. Thanks again for joining us in our corner of the universe. Listen away.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Realm presents Book Burners, Season 5, Episode 1.
There was a flash of darkness, as if the world blinked. Sal and the rest of the book burners, together with Yusuf and his young daughter Catherine, were driving headlong down the long, curved road that followed the bend of the bay on the coast of Alexandria. Brakes squealed somewhere to the right and ahead of them. They heard the crunch of an accident, and the column of cars in that lane stopped. "What was that?" Liam said. The world blinked again, and this time a pulse of wind followed, first heard, then felt as it swept over the water to their left, then the road, then the line of buildings to the right. All the cars on the thoroughfare jolted to a stop. Smoke rose ahead of them. In the driver's seat of the van, Liam let out a small curse. Sal heard a sharp peck behind her and turned to see a crack running across the rear window. "What was that?" Grace said. Manchu, riding shotgun, had his face close to the windshield and was peering upward.
"It was a shockwave from somewhere," Liam said.
The sky above the bay began to darken.
"Oh," Liam said. He was looking out over the water.
Sal leaned forward and followed his gaze. Something was happening over the bay, but it was too big to see clearly.
Liam put the van in park. "We're not moving anyway."
He opened the door and got out. They all followed. The clouds over the water and the blue beyond them didn't look like an expanse of space anymore, but rather a curtain thrown over something else, one that billowed and folded. Then the clouds and the sky began to smear into a mist, and out of that mist emerged something curved and pointed, a talon, a barb, attached to a bulb of bone, a long, scaled arm that curled upward into a bag of flesh, still wrapped in gauzy sky. It was impossible to say how big it was. Sal thought of skyscrapers, of distant mountains, of the tidal waves that appear in nightmares, but any real sense of scale was gone. The gauze dissipated, and now Sal could see other tendrils protruding from the top of the bag. Three of them ended in two-fingered hands with slender, fleshy tips. Three others ended in eyes, bright blue and blinking, as if waking up, just going to work. It all floated above the bay near Alexandria. And now Sal was aware of the crowd. Everyone else had gotten out of their cars. A few people screamed. A few pointed. Several held up their phones. There was murmuring all around her. The creature let out a call, a long note that echoed across the bay and curled downward at the end, making the buildings around them shudder.
"That's bigger than London," Liam said.
Grace nodded.
"What are we supposed to do about it?"
"I don't know," Sal said, "but we need to do something."
They heard commotion on the water, saw military ships deployed from somewhere to the east of them, bearing at full speed across the waves toward the thing hovering like a floating island offshore. Sal supposed there was no other choice. Someone in the armed forces had seen it, someone else had given an order. But seeing the ships compared to the creature in the sky, Sal understood how futile it all was. What were the chances that this thing was benign? The being over the bay raised its long talon, cocked it, and pushed it forward into the fabric of the sky with an unhurried speed that suggested it was bored. The tip disappeared. Then the creature drew a line, brought up its arms, and the fingers slipped into the seam it had made. It drew the sides back and opened up the air. Sal felt a ripple in her clothes, as if a wind were pushing her from behind. She looked at her friends, at Grace and Manchu, who returned her glance with expressions of steady concern. She looked into the air above her and saw the dust on the tops of the buildings that lined the bay rising and spiraling forward toward the seam. She saw the waves in the water reverse their direction, heading back out to sea. Closer to the tear, the water began to swell and spiral upward into a massive, towering vortex, even as the waves dropped beneath it, as if someone had pulled a plug on the ocean floor. The ships nearest the spout began to move even faster toward it, and now Sal could hear the receding blare of their alarms. The ships turned their guns and fired all at once at the thing in the sky, but it wasn't like shooting aircraft, or even like bombarding targets on the shore of an island. It was like trying to destroy the island itself. The shells from their artillery hit the creature with ease. How could they miss? And exploded on contact. Fires spread across its sagging belly and some rose to its eyes, but the creature didn't seem to mind. It turned its eyes to the seam it had made. Its fingers got a better grip on its edges, then pulled the seam wide open. And Sal saw. She saw a multitude of mangled creatures burning and heard them singing while they burned. She saw distant mountains rise and turn to smoke against a pink sky, and new mountains rise to take their place, then melt into wax. She saw the eyes of a beast turn toward the opening the creature in the sky had made, its pupils dilating with excitement. She saw a sun fading in a dark firmament, hovering over a blue desert, turning to liquid. She saw a forest run rampant across black soil, sprouting from a single tree to cover the earth to the horizon. She saw a million giant insects take flight, heard them chattering in 10,000 languages. She saw an expanse of swamp glowing with life, remaking itself into something she could not recognize. Sal knew she was too far away to see all these things and the tear in the sky the creature had made. Yet she saw them. The ocean continued to recede from the shore, roiling toward the open seam in the air, dragging the ships with it. The sand sifted out to sea. The road along the coast cracked in two places. Sal looked across the expanse of the bay at the buildings that lined the curve of the shore. She could have sworn they were leaning in. She heard a collective scream rising from the streets around them, a city on the verge of panic. Then Sal looked at Grace, Liam, Manchu, Asante, Yusef and Kasrin, father and daughter, somehow caught up with them. She had a second to step outside of herself and realize how far she'd come. Once, this all would have left her agog. Once, she would have needed orders, a task to follow. She would have had to have someone explain to her what was going on. But she had been there in Oklahoma when there were monsters in the sky, and she had been to other dimensions. She had seen demons and monsters enough to fill a lifetime. And she felt she had been peeling back the layers under the surface of the world. She still didn't know if there was a god or gods, but she knew there were angels, that they built the world, but badly, and wanted now to dismantle and forget about this thing that was home to everything she and everyone else held dear. She knew Hannah, the architect of reality, who was no angel in Sal's estimation, had said she was walking away from it all, had left humankind rudderless, and that they'd squabbled too hard over the scraps. And now, this creature off the coast of Alexandria, this wrecker of land and sea, was just Hannah making good on her threat at last to call the whole thing quits. This was part of Hannah's demolition crew, Sal thought. It had to be. And she knew that right now, There was nothing they could do about it. She raised her phone and took a picture, sent it to the Vatican. Hoped it got through. We have to go. Liam gestured at the standstill traffic up and down the road. We're not going anywhere in the van. Asante, Sal said, can you portal us out of here? Asante shook her head. There's too much magic around already. I'm afraid to try. I'm afraid of where I might put us. Sal turned to Yusuf. Can you point us toward the airport?
Of course.
How far is it?
2.5 kilometers, maybe.
They started running. It shouldn't have taken so long, but there were the other people running in the street to consider. The cars blocking the roads, the police trying to keep order, the accident when a frantic driver sped onto the sidewalk, a fallen piece of an apartment building blocking part of a lane. And behind them, always, the seam still open with the things of this earth warping toward it, reality bottoming out beneath it, a pink haze sifting out of it. Manchu had known who to call, pulled a string left over from all his years at the Vatican. A man named Jabari, who had a plane. He met them on the service road before the airport, a dusty track between the highway and the airfield. Above the noise of the traffic from the highway, the planes on the runway, the horns bleating all over the city, Sal could hear a keening in the air, a whistle, like the atmosphere was all rushing away from them, headed somewhere else. Somehow, Jabari was smiling.
I was hoping to have the excuse to leave, he said. We don't have much time.
He beckoned toward a gate in the fence that would lead directly to the airfield where a small plane was waiting. It could fit all of them, Sal knew, but it'd be a tight squeeze. The plane looked old. The propellers dull and black, streaks of brown that Sal hoped weren't rust ran along the plane's body. Grace didn't need to be told twice. She grabbed Sal's wrist and started off. The rest of the book burners followed. Yusuf hesitated.
What?
Asante asked. Yusuf looked at Kasrin, then back at the city. Kasrin was crying.
I'm hungry, Kasrin said.
Later, Yusuf said. We have to go now.
The plane was as cramped as Sal expected it to be, and it smelled like fuel, but everyone had a seat. The original chairs were long gone. Jabari had clearly built the current seats himself.
How many wars has this plane been through? Liam said. I know it's old, Jabari said, but you should be glad for that. It doesn't need complex electronics to work, so magic won't affect the instruments. It's one of the few planes in this airport that has a chance of making it anywhere. It is a small miracle you got a hold of me at all.
And you can fly this? Sal said.
Of course, Jabari said, with an attitude that seemed to Sal to be too confident.
Sal hadn't even told him where they were going, but he had already climbed into the cockpit and started the engines. The plane's propellers spun to life with a roar. A runway nearby was empty. Jabari taxied the plane fast and pulled it into the sky, paying no attention to the frantic calls from the air traffic controllers on the radio. Something rattled in the ceiling above them, then stopped. Sal looked out the window and could have sworn the plane's wings were wobbling. They felt the plane lurch, and Sal had the sudden impression that it had been a while since it had been in the air. Liam said a quick, irritated prayer. It lurched again, and they heard a scream as a much larger plane sliced through the air above them, way closer than it should have been.
Ha! Jabari said. That was a good one.
Asante's eyes were closed. Grace sat with her gaze fixed to the back of the seat in front of her. The engine strained again as they gained altitude, and now the book burners could see over the city. See what was happening in the bay.
Oh my God, Sal heard Liam say.
The wrecker was still there, hovering over the ocean, but there was less ocean than there had been. Less shore. Less of Alexandria. It was as though the monster had erased a square mile of city, of coast, of open water, blurred it all into something else that was still falling upward into the seam the creature had made. Fighter planes circled it like mosquitoes. The wrecker didn't seem to care. The border between the known world and the pink haze the wrecker was making of it was moving slow enough to be outrun. A fast car could do it. But that didn't seem to matter. It was going about its work as if it had all the time it needed, as if it knew nothing could stop it from completing its task. The field would keep growing, expanding in an ever-widening circle, until it enveloped the globe. The sky, the stars. Everything Sal understood to be real. It was only a question of how long they had before it was too late to stop it. The question of how still seemed too far off. That was when she heard someone say something unexpected.
It's beautiful.
It came from Asante. The older woman's hand was over her mouth, but Sal recognized the expression in her eyes. Fascination, even attraction. She'd seen it before on the faces of people in the grip of intense hallucinations. People who didn't want to come back. Asante. Asante's face turned to hers.
We need you.
Asante nodded.
I know.
Jivari leveled the plane off. The roar of the propellers made it loud inside, but Sal could feel her heart slow a little. She realized part of her had expected them to crash just after takeoff, but each minute in the air suggested that maybe Jivari knew what he was doing, after all.
Now, he shouted back to them, where are we going?
For Sal, there was only one possible answer.
Rome, she said.
Liam shot her a look.
Not the answer I was expecting, he said.
It's where Grace's candle is, Sal said.
We have to get it.
We're going back to the Vatican, Liam said.
We have to, Asante said. It's possible we're going to need to avail ourselves of the archives.
Liam sighed.
I know that it's far too late to be worrying about how much magic we're using, but it's never too late to worry about ourselves. Not what can happen to the world if we use too much, but what can happen to us?
You're thinking of Francis, Manchu said.
Francis is fine, Liam said. He directed his next sentence to Sal. I'm thinking more about your brother.
She wanted to be angry at Liam for bringing up Perry. It felt like a cheap shot. As if she needed reminding, as if she didn't think about him every minute.
We can make him better, she said.
Maybe we can, Liam allowed. But not if we join him and wherever he's going.
Sal knew Liam wasn't trying to be unkind. He was scared. But she had to find a way to let him know he was hurting her.
That's unfair, Sal said.
Liam put up a conciliatory hand, an acknowledgement that he had pushed a little too hard.
All I'm saying is that there's a real danger of losing ourselves in this stuff, he said. I'm all right with change. I'm not all right when it's so dramatic that we lose sight of ourselves, lose sight of what we want.
And what do we want? Asante said. What kinds of lives are we envisioning for ourselves in this new world?
Do we really need to get into that now? Grace asked.
The nice pilot just wants to know where to point the plane.
I was expecting Sal to say London, Liam said. Get our people and then figure out what we're going to do.
And what are we going to do?
I don't know, but we'll figure something out, won't we? We always have. It's the only thing I believe in anymore, our ability to muddle through the worst catastrophes the demon world can throw out at us, though this one is so big. I don't know. We'll think of something. Even if it's just holing ourselves up in a cave in Scotland with canned meat and vegetables and jars and waiting for the walls to turn to mush around us, at least we'll go down together.
I am not burning off the rest of my days in a cave in Scotland, Grace said.
You know what I mean. Whatever we do, we have to do it together. It's the only way we've gotten through anything since the world started changing into giant dragonflies and molten flowers. By hanging together.
Liam looked almost startled by what he had said. Sal allowed herself a smile.
That might be the nicest thing you've said in a while.
I didn't mean it to be nice, Liam said.
Manchu let out a cough. At first, Sal thought he might be choking. Then the corners of his mouth turned upward. He let out a chuckle.
Another?
Now he was laughing.
I'm sorry, he said and laughed a little harder.
It swept in a wave over the inside of the plane, one after another. They spent a minute just laughing at each other. Just to buy another day to stay together. Another day they didn't crack.
But what if we can do better than muddle through?
Asante said after the last snicker died down.
I think we can. We have this.
Asante held up the seed she'd been given, turned it over in her fingers. If Sal squinted, she could swear it was giving off a little light, but she couldn't say for sure. Sal wanted the seed to seem more special than it was. A strange color, maybe encased in gold leaf or presented on a pillow. But it was just a seed, about the size of a dime. It could have been the seed of any of the thousands of species of plants in the world Sal was unfamiliar with. It was a lot to hang the fate of the world on. But what else did they have?
We still don't know what it's for, Grace said.
That's true, Asante said. But I have an inkling. I learned a few things in the Library of Alexandria, some lessons I'm still sorting through. To me, this seems like a case of not overthinking it. What do you do with the seed?
Roast it and eat it, Liam said.
Don't be ridiculous. It's just a question of knowing where to plant it.
I'm sure the answer is more complicated than that, Grace said.
Yes and no.
And what do you think it grows into? Sal asked.
I hope we get a chance to find out, Asante said.
She seemed a little aglow again, the way she had been when she was looking at the thing destroying the city below them as they took flight. Sal wasn't so sure she agreed with her.
So, Rome then?
Sal said. Grace and Asante nodded. Manchu turned to Liam. Liam rolled his eyes. Fuck it.
Jabari, Sal called to the front of the plane.
I heard the whole thing, he said, as cheery as ever.
Call Sansoni, Manchu said. Let them know we're coming.
We can imagine many potential futures. Some serve as inspiration, others, warnings. Wondery offers one possibility of the future in their new show, The Last City. The year is 2072, and the city of Piura stands as a miraculous green haven. Piura is a geo-engineered paradise that protects fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. Demetria Lopez heads up Piura's public relations, tirelessly promoting the city's idyllic image. But when she stumbles upon a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Piura's existence, she must decide who and what she's willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Ray Seahorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Outside, the sky was turning paler, but Sal couldn't say if it was natural or magic. It was a small miracle to her that her phone worked. As it vibrated, she looked over the open ocean and imagined the worst. that there was an army of wreckers like the one they had seen off the coast of Alexandria. They were taking apart the world now. Maybe there were no cities to return to. Maybe there was no dry land left, and it was just them and whoever else happened to be in the air until the fuel ran out. But Sansoni picked up. Another small miracle. "Sal," she said, "are you all right?" "We're still alive," Sal said. "Thank God. Did you see one of those things?" "One of them. Sal's nightmare scenario. A wrecker. Good word for them. It had taken away half of Alexandria by the time we left." "I have terrible news." Sansoni's voice went calm. She was doing her job now. For Sal, it made the news worse. "There are a lot of them, all over the world. We have reports of one in Moscow now. Montevideo has been erased." "So they're targeting cities?" Sal asked, thinking of London. "No, there's a hole in western Kansas now. Another hole in the Amazon. A hole got made in the Pacific Ocean somehow. There doesn't seem to be much of a pattern to it, at least not one that follows where the people are." Sal thought about how the wrecker had behaved, even as the Egyptian Navy lit up its belly with heavy fire. "They're not worried about whether people are there or not," Sal said. "It's not about us." "I suppose it never was." "How much time do you think we have?"
"Until what?"
"You know." Sansoni took in a breath, let it out. "Hard to say. A few weeks? 40 days and 40 nights, maybe?"
"It would figure.
Enough time to try to do something." "I'm glad you said so. Team One has its hands full. There's nothing they can do against those things. They know. They've switched strictly to rescue efforts, trying to get people out of harm's way." "And hurting them where? Where is safe? Who knows? They're doing what they can. Meanwhile, I am convening a meeting."
"Of who?"
"Everyone," Sansoni said. "Everyone who knows anything about magic. There's a delegation coming from the Chinese Arcane Security Bureau, another one from Central America, people coming from London, from all over Europe. I can't tell you what a relief it is to be talking to you. You're an essential part of this. I think together, perhaps we can figure out something, some sort of plan. It's better than not making one. Better than doing nothing. We were just talking about that. And you're coming from Egypt by sea, I hope. By plane." There was a long pause on the other end of the line. "Then, I don't know how you're going to make it. The encounter Team One had with one of those wreckers just now, before they understood that there was nothing they could do against them, was in the Mediterranean, south of here. They described the thing drawing a thin line across the sky, east to west, from horizon to horizon, like it slit the belly of heaven, one of them said. And the magic just came pouring out."
"Horizon to horizon?" Sal asked.
"As far as they could see." "And you don't know how far it goes?"
"No."
Sal stopped and thought. "We have to take our chances."
"Don't you always?"
"Good luck." Sal got off the phone and told the rest of the team. They understood, but they stopped talking after that and just looked out the plane's windows, waiting. Watching.
"Hey," Jabari said. "I see something."
Sal clambered to the cockpit. Jabari was right. Ahead of them, the sky shimmered a translucent pink. Beyond it was more sky, more sea, things recognizable as belonging to the world she knew. But they had to fly through the shimmer to get there.
"What does that look like to you?" Sal said.
Jabari had stopped smiling.
"I don't know. I've never seen anything like it. Do you think we can go through it?"
Jabari looked to the left and right. The curtain of pink stretched as far as they could see. He pointed to his fuel gauge.
"It's the only choice we have."
"How close is it now?"
"A couple minutes away. I suggest you sit down."
Sal did.
"A minute left," Jabari called.
Sal felt Grace's hand fall atop hers. Grace's fingers wrapped around hers, and Sal gave them a squeeze.
Almost there, Jabari said.
I'm glad you're here, Sal told Grace. Grace just nodded. Pink light bathed the inside of the plane. They heard a sound like water falling all around them, water and wind and a rush of insects and birds. A few pitches rising in unison, a far-off chorus of metallic voices. A final rattling hiss, and the pink light receded. They were still in the air, still flying.
Well, what do you know? Liam said. We made it.
They heard Jabari laughing in the cockpit. Then he was screaming. The light coming from the front of the plane went out. They started to lose elevation fast.
Jabari! Sal got out of her seat with Grace. The two of them slid toward the cockpit, and Sal got a good view of what was happening up there. The metal and plastic in the cockpit looked like leather. It was turning into skin. The windows were filling in with membranes, white tendrils of flesh dropped from the ceiling, and Jabari wasn't holding the plane's controls anymore. His hands had melted into them. He was part of them. He took a deep, hacking breath to scream again, and a string of meat dropped into his mouth, expanded to fill it. Jabari stopped screaming. They heard a slow, beating sound.
Sal, Liam called. The wings.
Sal turned. The other bookburners were getting out of their seats. The windows on the sides were fogging over, but not so much that Sal couldn't see that the wings were flapping now, that they were a filmy mass of skin and patches of feathers. Now, the insides of the plane were softening, the ceiling, the walls, the floor, becoming muscles and tendons, flexing in the wind.
We have to get out of this plane, Grace said. And go where? Manchu said.
They were much lower than they had been. It occurred to Sal that perhaps this new animal needed to breathe as well as any of them, but they were still high over the ocean. Grace patted her on the shoulders.
Let me up.
Sal braced her feet on the softening floor, and Grace vaulted onto her shoulders, took a deep breath, and punched upward into the ceiling. She made a hole in the skin that started leaking dark blood onto them both. With a grunt, Grace thrust a hand into the hole she'd made and scooped out flesh. Put two hands in and widened the hole. It was bleeding a lot now, too much for Sal to look up. She closed her eyes and only heard Grace working, felt blood and warm, soft pieces of something falling on her, sliding off. Then a sudden gust of wind. More grunting, the bleeding lessened. Grace shifted her weight. Sal felt Grace's feet on her shoulders, then nothing. She opened her eyes and looked. Grace had ripped a hole in the ceiling, a hole to the open air, and had already crawled through. She was outside the plane, crouched over the hole, reaching back down. The inside of the plane had gotten narrower. The windows were gone. It was filling with flesh, the shapes of organs, of membranes, of blood vessels, of bones. A creature being born in the air. Manchu stepped forward.
Your turn, he said.
But the captain, the ship, Sal said.
Screw that, Manchu said. You need to be up there with her.
She nodded. Manchu clasped his fingers together. Sal stepped into the foothold he made, and he lifted her up toward the hole. Grace caught her wrist and pulled her up with one arm, and Sal was almost blown away by the rush of wind. She thought it should kill them, but then realized the creature wasn't flying at the speed of a plane anymore. It was an animal. But it was still flying. Grace had already dug holes into the flesh around them, found bones for them to hold on to. Sal clutched too, dug in her feet as best she could. Grace hoisted Asante up next, then Liam, then Kasserine and Yusef. Something had grown out of the front of the plane, a long neck like a crane. A bulbous head, a short beak. Grace pulled Manchu up last, and the animal let out a croaking, burbling squawk. The holes Grace was making to save them had hurt it. A lot. It was half dead before it was born. Its neck arched and the upside-down head, its eyes a glossy silver, saw them and screeched. It reared back, aiming at Asante. Grace intervened. She leapt onto the thing's head and stayed there, bucking in the wind.
Don't kill it! Sal shouted.
The head swerved and snapped.
took a small rest, enough for Grace to shoot Sal an irritated look.
"Do you think I'm stupid?"
she shouted back. But now the animal was bobbing and diving, trying to get the humans off it. For a sickening second, Liam and Menchu both flipped over as if they were gymnasts on high bars, starting on their bellies, then their legs flying upward and forward to land hard on their backs against the creature. Still hanging on, but Menchu was coughing.
"I have something," Asante said, "but I need help. My left hand is hurt from the library."
"What do you need?"
Sal said. "Reach into my pocket," Asante said.
Sal inched over to her and did, felt a small rectangular object inside.
"It's a book," Sal said. "Get it out, but don't drop it."
"Okay." It seemed like an address book, small enough to fit in her palm, but Sal didn't understand the writing on the cover.
"No, we need a ring of some kind," Asante said. "It'd be a ring of candles, usually."
"That's not happening," Liam said.
"I know. Maybe we can make a ring out of us,"
Asante said. She nudged one of her feet forward to touch Sal.
"Everyone, figure out how to make a circle."
Sal felt Kasserine's hand on her leg. She saw everyone join up one way or another, a hand on a shoulder, a foot brushing against a calf. In a way, except for Grace still bucking in the wind, they'd never been so close.
"Press the book against my forehead," Asante said.
Sal reached out, bobbled the book, almost dropped it, kept a hold on it. Then she covered Asante's forehead with it as if Asante had a fever and Sal was there to assuage it. Asante closed her eyes and began chanting a string of words in a language Sal didn't recognize, wasn't sure she'd ever heard before. The language became furious. Then Asante choked on something. A ball of black phlegm burst from her mouth. Asante squawked, just like the creature had. Her eyes went silver. And then the creature calmed, evened out its flight, even slowed down a little so the book burners didn't have to hang on so tightly.
"Can we break the circle now?" Sal asked.
Asante nodded. Grace was straddling the creature's neck, riding the plane as if she'd tamed it.
"You're not gonna believe this," she shouted, "but we're coming up on an island."
The animal glided toward it.
You're listening to Book Burners, created and produced by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror, missing for nearly 6 months now.
"That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side path?"
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
"Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast."
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
"I need you to find me."
"To save yourself."
"Of course.
What else would it be?"
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Book Burners is created by Max Gladstone and written by Max Gladstone, Margaret Dunlap, Murr Lafferty, Andrea Phillips, and Brian Francis Slattery. Executive produced by Molly Barton and Julian Yap. Performed by Exe Sands. Audio production by Amanda Rose Smith, with additional editing by Corey Barton. Original theme by Hashem Asadolahi, featuring Jody Redditch Ferber and mixed by Justin Morrell. Cover art by Annie Wu. Executive in charge for Realm, Mary Asadolahi. Find more shows like Book Burners by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.